Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories. Listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, the campus community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from the unceded ancestral territory of the Halkamilaman Squamish speaking people, who have been here since time immemorial, living, gathering, sharing stories and music and culture. And I'm very grateful to be able to do the same thing, my own version of that, here in this beautiful place. I'm Jesse. And today on the show, I have a mix of things. I've got an interview that I just did with the curator of a new exhibit at the Bill Reid Gallery in Vancouver. I've got some pieces from Frequency News. I've got my conversation with Min about Ender's Game. And of course, I've got some music, as usual. Most of it local, although a little bit of a spin, because I am going away. I mentioned this last week, but this will be my last live show for 3 weeks as I am headed off to the land of the rising sun, Japan, for, well, that amount of time, 3 weeks. I'm going to be spending a bunch of time in Tokyo, Osaka, Sendai, Yamagata, Kinosaki, all over the place. I'll let you know everything so you can stalk me while I'm over there, but I'm very excited to take a much-needed vacation, but also to go explore a place that has captured my brain since I was a young child. So that should be lots of fun. And I got some music that is related to that trip that I'm going to play as we get into things. But we are, of course, as usual, going to start with something that is local and amazing. And that is more music from the new record Ocelon by Bloom Effect. This one is called Surreal.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. That was Surreal by Bloom Effect, the closing track on their new record, Ocelon. And now we're going to hear my interview with Emilia Ray, who is the curator of a new exhibit called Indian Giver at the Bill Reed Gallery, which is an exhibition that invites viewers to step into a potlatch and explore all the various meanings and depth of meaning that goes into a potlatch and gift giving, and to reimagine and take back the idea of the offensive term Indian giver. And I spoke with Emilia at the Bill Reed Gallery in downtown Vancouver, right as she was preparing to leave to go back to Haida Gwaii. And so ending her time as assistant curator at the museum. But I really recommend going and checking out the exhibit, the exhibition called Indian Giver. It will be there until February 22nd, 2026, just opened. And without any further ado, here is, I say about our conversation, she also sort of walked me through the exhibit and talked about each of the pieces and what each of them meant and how it all came together. So you get a little bit of a walking audio tour and also a little bit of a conversation between the two of us, just wrapping up the whole thing. So without further ado, let's get into it.
My name is Gudane Haskell Emilia Ray. I am Haida from Old Masset Haida Gwaii and the curator of Indian Giver at the Bill Reed Gallery of Northwest Coast Art. I chose the title as I think I was reading an article about the term Indian giver and just the, derogatory terms in general. And at the time, I wasn't too sure what I was going to call the exhibit and decided to do just a little bit more reading on where the term comes from and ultimately just decided that would be the name as kind of a way to reclaim a term that is rooted in racism and misunderstanding, to just say, no, this is actually how we give, and this is actually how we create relationships with one another and hold each other accountable if need be. And, that term is really rooted in misunderstanding of Indigenous ways of giving and relation to one another. So that's, just more of a reclamation more than anything of that term.
Yeah, I can talk about some of the pieces. Right behind you is a kind of a recreation of my auntie's kitchen cabinet, a much smaller recreation. And so the entire exhibition was inspired by a mug, which I'm probably one of very few curators who look at a mug and think, oh, I'm going to turn that into an exhibition. But one way or another, I made it come together.
Which mug?
I don't know exactly. It was kind of a moment that I had while I was having lunch with my auntie at her house, and I went to go grab a mug for a cup of coffee and opened up her kitchen cabinet, which is like super tall, and this is a cabinet that I've seen so many times in my life, but I looked at it and I was like, well, that's a lot of mugs, and all of them were gifted at potlatches. And so I was just thinking of the weight that is actually in, such a humble household object. And that sent me into a bit of a spiral thinking about everything that's given out of potlatch and the potlatch system as a whole. And so that's, in a nutshell, what this exhibition is about, is to invite people to have kind of their own moment with the mug and think about the weight that comes with whatever you're given out of potlatch, no matter how grand or humble it may be. By accepting a gift out of potlatch, you're accepting the responsibility to carry those events forward. You're accountable to those relationships with the host as the witness. You're also agreeing with what took place. And so it was kind of a moment where I was like, oh, that's a lot of potlatches that she then accepted that responsibility and is now accountable to those hosts, those families. And they're cool. Like they have crest designs on them, dates and names memorializing loved ones. So her and I went through her collection together, and she chose some, and we both talked about some of them and decided which ones we would show. So this one up here is the oldest one. This is from the 55th anniversary of the Native Brotherhood, which was in 1985, and that was Native Brotherhood was co-founded by one of my great-great-grandfathers. And so it was really cool that she even had that. And she was almost hesitant. She's like, this is really precious. And I'm like, I promise I'll take really good care of it. I'll hold it with me on the plane so that I'm not making sure it's not damaged. And some of them, you know, come from my family. Like this one here is from my parents' coffee shop that they ran when I was a kid. And so that was given away at the opening of the coffee shop as a payment for everyone witnessing my name being given to me. So that would have been 23 years ago. And then there's some from my late grandmothers and some from my family in Alaska, and they all have a story within themselves. Yeah,
it's an interesting metaphor for the whole thing.
And it was cool to just, you know, have her see this and really see what my vision was. And I leaned on her a lot in the curation of this show. She's a potlatch powerhouse in her own right, so it was really special for her to be here for the opening and come and see it for herself. And then we kind of go into, this is where the artists that are featured in this exhibition, this is where all their work is. So these two go together. These were done by Celtic artists, Charlie Brown and Casey Hall. This was their kind of first collaboration outside of their clothing brand. They're the faces behind the History Makers. So this is kind of a prototype of what will eventually be a larger box of treasures that will be gifted to Charlie's dad. And so Casey did this side and Charlie did the other, and on either ends are their signatures. And in talking with them about the exhibition, we had a lot of ideas of what they could do and landed on the box of treasures, as it's kind of at the center of the potlatch when a clan, a chief, a family opens their box of treasures, and you know, it contains tangible and intangible wealth and property, and also things to be given away. So we initially thought that we would fill it up and have people look inside, and then decided to let those pieces kind of stand on their own. So over here is some of those treasures. That's Charlie's son's tunic, and then a mask for his dad. As you know, some of those treasures that could be brought out during a potlatch that would live in the box of treasures. And things could be like songs and stories, origin stories and connections to the supernatural and ceremonies, and all sorts of things can go in that treasure box. Over here, this is a painting by Skiljaday White. Skiljaday is also my best friend. So this painting was finished probably at about 3 a.m. the night before the opening, or the day before install, I mean, in my living room. So it was really cool. I love when she comes to my house and just turns it into her art studio. So her and I talked about kind of her vision and what this was gonna look like. And we wanted to show kind of the end of the night of a potlatch. So this painting is titled 3 a.m. So that's usually around the time that it would end, if not even later. So it shows in the longhouse, around the fire, material wealth is stacked around to be given away to the witnesses. And so you can see, you know, this was after ceremony, so there's eagle down that had been spread during ceremony. This is Ulican grease, which is highly prized up and down the Northwest Coast, especially on Haida Gwaii, because we don't have Ulicans. These are Sailor Boy pilot biscuits, which are also like, it's kind of like gold on Haida Gwaii, because we can actually get them in Canada. So if anybody has like a secret plug, then they probably keep it secret for a reason. And so we trade with it or bring it down from Alaska. And they're just, they're crackers. But really loved.
Scarcity.
Yeah. Really well loved. And then we have the box of treasures behind it, the copper shield, which we can talk about later, and a stack of sea otter pelts, which are also highly prized. So we just wanted to show, you know, what what that would look like in a potlatch, and it's the wealth is brought out and shown before it's given away.
It's interesting that the painting was finished in your living room the night before install, and that's sort of the moment it's depicted as well.
Well, that's just, even with like these pieces, like this one was finished the day before it came to the gallery. That one was finished probably a couple hours before we put it in the case. So, you know, it's, I was talking about it with the artist, and I'm like, well, this is kind of like super on brand for a show about the potlatch, because that's exactly what would happen at the potlatch. You know, our masks could be danced while they're still wet with paint. Mm-hmm. And that's just the reality, is you're working until the very last second. So it felt just kind of had to live in the chaos and just let it be.
Was that at all intentional, or is that just sort of how it happened?
No, it wasn't intentional. It's just the way it worked out. And I think it was just fine. I knew it was all going to come together in the end. So it was just fine.
It seems like that's the way it should have been.
I think so too. Yeah. Yeah, I think so. And you know, just learning to, I think maybe we even thrive in that chaos a little bit. It felt very natural, because that's exactly what we would have been doing if we were preparing for a potlatch. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. This one is really fun for me. This one, I decided to put these in as like a connection to, a lot of this exhibition is very personal. There's a lot of personal connections, but this one comes from one of my ancestors, one of my direct ancestors. Her name was Dafkawas from the village of Yon, which is along the Macedon Lip. And this was a potlatch that probably took place in like the late 1700s. And was recorded by some of her descendants in conversation with Murdoch, who was an anthropologist at Yale. And so it's kind of a gem that we have. And so her descendants were obviously present and witness at this potlatch. And something that's really cool about Murdoch is in this like time period where anthropologists and scholars and explorers were coming to Haida Gwaii and documenting. A lot of them had a really patriotic mindset, you know, where everything is done by the man. And so there's actually not a lot documented about Haida women, and that's really backwards for us because we're matrilineal, and everything that we are comes from our mother's line. And so what's really cool about this is he was really able to like capture that. He did a really good job of like highlighting that it was her potlatch and her house and her totem pole, and it wasn't her husband's. And so it talks about all the things that she gave away, the ceremonies that took place, the names of people that were there, so it's a really powerful document in that way. At the end of the potlatch, when she was bringing out all these material goods, she talked about how she accumulated her wealth, how she was able to afford to build a house and raise a pole and host a potlatch, and it was because she was a potato farmer, and she went up and down the coast trading her potatoes for all of this physical material wealth to give away. And so she had stacks and stacks of blankets, like an estimated about 900 to 1,000 blankets like these to be given away, and then horn spoons and bowls and all these different things that she gave to her house builders and her husband's family if she thought they spoke well or danced really well, and her midwives. Her children were adults at that point, but she paid her midwives, which I thought was really beautiful. And then as she was going down this stack of blankets, the very last one was like no more than a rag, and so she held it up and she said, and this is for my husband for all the work that he did. So I thought she really captured, you know, just showed that humor that many Haida women have and is still very present in potlatches today. And if not, I think it's really necessary to have those moments of cheekiness. And my mom also has her name, so she received it from her great-grandmother, and so it shows that that's the name that's come down so far down the line. And when I read that, I thought of my mom, like, almost instantly, because I could picture her her doing that. And so, you know, just shows the intergenerational humor of Haida woman. But I thought it was a cool connection to include because these blankets are still really highly prized up and down the Northwest coast. Some of the first button blankets came from wool blankets, and they're, you still see them being given away. Yeah, what's funny about this is these are all from like my collection or my mom's, and she's like, what are you gonna do about the rag? And I was like, well, I was just gonna cut up one of ours. And she was like so like scared. And then finally she's like, okay, you can cut up this one because it's already pretty raggy. I sent her a video of me hacking it up for her. Yeah. Over here, just have an array of trade beads and jewelry, just examples of things that could be given away. It's really common for people to be stringing beads and turning them into necklaces, hundreds to be given away. And so these also all came from my personal collection, which was really interesting to be like going through my stuff and be like, what am I not gonna miss too much? Or like, what am I gonna wanna wear in the next couple of months? And then I kind of came to the realization of like, I don't actually wear many of them. They just kind of sit pretty. So it's okay that I don't have them for a little while. The trade beads came, the blue ones came from Russia and then were traded from Russia. And then kind of through the years and through time, other colors and other types came from many different places through trade. And are still highly prized and still worn. Over here. The copper, this copper is one of the highest forms of wealth up and down the Northwest Coast. They're used in potlatch, traded amongst chiefs, and they gain wealth every time that they gain value, every time they're potlatched or traded. When they're given names, they act as a witness to ceremonies and significant moments in time. They also are a form of governance. They can be broken if alliances are broken or there's some sort of dispute between people, between parties. They can be broken and shown that publicly that there needs to be repair. And so this one here was made by Sid Crosby, who comes from Skidigit. And it was made for Tamara Davidson, who is the MLA for North Coast Haida Gwaii. She's the first Indigenous woman to hold that position. And she had it made when she was being sworn into the parliament. And so she, I didn't know this, but you can actually swear on anything. And so she didn't know what to swear this oath on, and then decided to have a copper made. And you know, we'll take it to significant moments in her own life, and was very excited when I called her up and asked her if I could show it in my exhibition. Kind of the last thing in the show is this very large wall. I didn't really know what to do with it. I went through a couple of ideas and talked about it with my family and ultimately decided on prints. So prints are really common, or a really common gift in potlatches now, present day, and have been for quite a few generations. And my mom likes to joke that like every time she's given one at a potlatch, she gets kind of spunky because she has nowhere to put anything, no more wall space. So quite a few of these come from my own collection or the collection of my family. And I'll highlight a couple of them. Like this one, it has like kind of a shinier texture. So this was a print that was done for my great-great-grandmother for her memorial potlatch, and it was a set of two. We didn't quite get the other one up, but that one was for my great-grandmother. And they were both done by two of her grandsons. And it was for their headstone moving potlatch. And this one came from my late grandmother on my other side, her own collection. And she had them laminated because she was a school teacher. So she used them in her classroom as like teaching points. And so there's a few of them that are laminated. I think maybe just two, but I thought that was a cool way to bring my family and my own ancestors into this space, and that was very intentional. I really wanted them to be here, and so like the one next to it was done by her grandson, my grandmother's brother, And this was like the last print he had made before he passed. And so these were given at his memorial potlatch earlier this year. And so I thought those ones were a cool connection. And there's a number of just different ones in here that date back quite a few years. This one is from the inauguration potlatch of Chief Idunsu, Jim Hart, who was already in this space quite a bit. But I thought that one was another cool one to show. And they're lived in pieces. You know, some of them are crinkled, and I think that maybe brings life to it even more, that they're not always just put on the wall. Sometimes they're circulated through classrooms and through families, and they memorialize moments in time. They memorialize people at, you know, their end of mourning potlatches. The announcement of babies, like this one down here, was made for my little cousin as her like birth announcement quite a few years ago. I think she's about 16 now, so that one comes from my personal collection. This middle one I thought was really cool to include. It's kind of just a bit, unique, and that's from the wedding of Terry Lynn and Robert Davidson. And I didn't even really know I had it until I knew I had it. And so I thought that was a cool one to include as well. And it made up a nice use of the space. And oftentimes this is how they're displayed in people's homes. So.
Great. Well, thanks for that's, showing me.
That's the spiel.
The exhibit.
Yeah.
What led you to museum curation and being in the position to do this exhibit?
My mom. Long story short, she's been in this field my entire life for over 30 years, and kind of just took me alongside with her, and so it was very natural to just kind of go with the path she's already been laying out for me. So yeah, it was very natural.
I mean, it's obviously been, as you said, sort of there your whole life, but what do you think it's given you or taught you?
I think it's given me like an extra connection to, I think what kept me in it was like a love for my people and my ancestors. I spend a lot of time in museums and back rooms and those collections in the back rooms, so just another connection to them, and wanting to foster that relationship through there and also bring my community when I can. And probably just my community, that, you know, they see something in me, and a lot of my work, I focus around them. I don't speak about them or their stories without fully knowing I'm accountable to them, and that they need to have a say in how I tell any story.
Is there anything that you try to do differently based on your experiences in the museum world?
I don't know. I think I do what I've been taught, what my family and my mom and my aunties and my grandparents that I've been doing this work with, what they've shown me, how to walk in a good way and create relationships. They've done a really good job of showing